welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hello, this is Jessica Chotan, and I am here with
Barney Leventino,
and
we are ready to turn the page.
So our guest today is
Professor Howard Ehrlich from St. John's University.
And would you like to talk a little bit about the lecture that you did at the library the other day?
Absolutely. We did it on Robert Moses. The theme was villain or hero. And what we did basically is submitted some evidence on his life and let the audience decide whether he was a villain or a true hero. So it took us out of the picture, so to speak.
So it was almost like a choose your own adventure lecture, or choose your own conclusion.
Exactly. We like to doing that. That's an organization we have called H&H Scholars. And another professor and myself do these lectures all over Long Island, universities, libraries, and so forth. And we like doing that. We like doing some topics of history and current events, whatever, and let the audience decide, basically.
And what did they decide?
Interesting enough, we thought they would be leaning toward more a villain than hero, or I think they're sort of in between. Because he did some very nice things and not so nice things.
You know, it's interesting. We're sitting here in Syosset, and we're just a few miles from the terminus of the Seaford Oyster Bay Expressway. And every decade or so, the notion of finishing up the Cross Sound Bridge pops up. And that is a big issue here in this area. Did that come up in the lecture?
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, about a couple of months ago, we did a presentation on Robert Moses back in Seaford Historical Society, where the terminus was in that end. Mm-hmm. And we learned some things as well we did not know. The conclusion was, no way is this going to get built for various reasons, real estate, power of play, and so forth and so on. The idea of having it was to cut the drive up to New England. But there are too many obstacles, environmental, mm-hmm. historic, land, real estate, you name it.
Now, Robert Moses never was elected to any official office in New York State.
Oh, that's
correct?
True. He was appointed.
Correct. Exactly. He was never elected. Interesting story about this is that he became what is called, the best way to put it, it was called the governor of the Commission of State Parks, but it expanded. His title has expanded. And he was never elected. Actually, he ran for governor. I don't know if you knew this. Again, there was a Republican ticket against Herman Lehman. And, of course, he lost. But after that, he became one of the most powerful people in this country. And this allowed him, this is a very interesting aspect of his power, since he was appointed, and he began starting these commissions, various kinds of commissions, state park commission and so forth, he did not have to go to the legislature for any money.
How did that work?
They were given funds, and then he used the, for example, we'll talk about it in a minute, the various highways and parkways he'd built, mm-hmm. tolls from that, went directly into commission. He could go out and have debt, actually apply for bonds, wow. and have in the market without any legislative approval.
So he knew how to work the system.
Correct, to the ultimate degree.
That he became the system, in
Correct.
A way.
And you could say that in many cases he's more powerful than the governor of the state in many respects.
Now, I know we look around here on Long Island and we see all over the place his legacy, right off the top of my head. Northern State Parkway, Southern State Parkway.
You go to Jones Beach and it has his name
Absolutely.
As you drive in.
Mm-hmm. Yes. What's interesting about it, he used, and this is why he was so, I get great in his field, let me go back just for a minute about his training for a minute. Uh-huh. You know, he grew up in New Haven, Connecticut, from a very wealthy family, just a few blocks from Yale University. Uh-huh. He did go to Yale, by the way, okay? Went to Oxford and got his PhD from Columbia. people know this. This man is extremely intelligent. Also, was an athlete. He was a swimmer.
Oh, that you know, I didn't know.
That I wouldn't picture looking at him.
Yeah.
Right. So some of the aspects. But going back to your question, you want to ask that again?
In terms of his legacy here on Long Island, it's everywhere.
Correct. And the reason is that he foresaw the use of the automobile. That was the key.
Mm-hmm. That is actually one thing I was going to go into, but please elaborate on that and I will come back to it.
Sure. He saw, especially at the end of World War II, that the automobile is going to change society. And, of course, the growth of Long Island is directly keyed to Long Island, to the automobile.
Mm-hmm.
R.E. Levittown, for example. And so he knew that with the automobile, they needed roads. And hence the state parkways and so forth. And he had this master plan to expand it. Now, don't forget, with the expansion of the state parkways, real estate became a premium.
Mm-hmm.
Developments such as Levittown and so forth, the migration from the city, which was beginning after World War II, people came back, started families, began to move out. And so he was way out in the front of that. And with the migration of that, the automobile, he began to expand his power. You have the parkways. And by the way, the old joke is, what is it?
You drive it. You can't park in a... No, you drive in a parkway and you park in a driveway. Is that what you were thinking? Yeah.
Which is exactly. Now, with the parkways, if I may digress for a minute, he wanted the parkway to be that, a park and a way to drive through it. People don't realize that. You know, we take it for granted. We go, and then, you know.
Well, if you look at the landscaping along the parkways, it's very different than it is along the expressway.
Correct.
Especially going out east, like towards Northport. I mean, the trees, it's gorgeous.
Correct. And that was his theme. And he wanted to have bicycle paths along the way, which in some cases you do see.
Mm-hmm.
And then hence you have the Bethpage Park and so forth, State Parks and so forth, Dallas Dream. That was his goal. He knew the expansion population. He wanted the parks to be there as well as a way to getting to those parks.
There was, when you talk about the parkways and you talk about Robert Moses, the issue that oftentimes comes up is the construction of the bridges over the parkways, which some say were purposely designed to prevent
trucks,
buses
and trucks
from traveling, and he did that for a reason.
Right. Now, here is one of the negatives, exactly, Elliot accused of Mr. Moses. One theory is that he made the bridges so that large buses, as you pointed out, could not come out from the city. And who takes those buses but minorities?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the allegation was he was against minorities. There was some kind of racial discrimination here. You know, there are arguments on both sides for that. You can take a look on it. I don't think his original plan was for that. I think he just used it for cars on there. He wanted cars, not buses. As it turned out, you're right. There were no buses there. So what happens is that who comes out from the city, they can't take the parkways, all right, they find other means of getting out there. Correct.
And he wasn't a huge fan of public transportation. Is that correct?
In a way, yes, because he thought the automobile was the way to go.
Right.
Correct. And right. And he didn't want to spend too much money on buses and subways and so forth. Although, when the World's Fair came out.
Yes.
Especially in 1964, he realized that that was key. Getting the Long Island Railroad, have a stop there, as well as the subway line, the 7th line, to get there, to get people access to the World's Fair. Correct.
And he was largely involved in the World's Fair.
Two World's Fairs.
Was one of them more successful than the other, or were they both not as successful as he thought they were going to be?
Well, 39 was definitely more successful.
Of course, yes, yes.
No question about that. Different time.
Yeah.
I mean, 39, you're looking at, you know, the still in the Depression years.
Mm-hmm.
People could go there, sort of a way to lose themselves in the tough times. However, in 64, he did not plan it well. He expected many more pavilions to come in. It did not work as well as he expected. The Flushing Meadow area, where the original World's Fair was selected there as well. So yes, there's no question about that. It was not one of his greatest successes.
It's interesting, though, that you talk about just the times being different. I actually just interviewed a woman who was talking about the circus, the rise and fall of the circus. And the circus was huge in the Depression. And, you know, I mean, things were definitely changing in the 60s. You know, even though I always say the 60s didn't become the 60s people think of until 68, 69, mm-hmm. it still was such a transitional time. And I guess the way people were consuming entertainment changed.
Yes, no question about that. The changes at times, well, you can go, it's not only television, but theater and so forth. Absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. And so that's why another reason why the World's Fair wasn't as successful as it was.
Well, I went to the World's Fair. I think I was about 4 or 5 years old, and I still have some memories of it.
Did you love it?
I did.
Of course.
I did.
As young kid,
I did.
Of course.
Yes. Yeah.
Did you have the Belgian waffle?
I did.
Okay. Oh, nice.
I remember that. Yeah, I do remember that. Yes.
So get it. So I getting back to the cars, it's interesting you mentioned that. And when I was doing a little research for this, there is a lot of talk about Robert Moses really influencing the car culture of America of the 50s in general. My brother moved up to Massachusetts, and the public transportation up there is great. And he seems to forget that he grew up here and what it's like. So he was visiting a few months ago, and he's like, there's so many cars on the road. I don't understand. Why are there no cars on the road? And why are there so many cars on the road? And I said to him, I'm like, well, public transportation on the island isn't built for, you know, the way that it is near you now.
Correct. Matter of fact, I'll tell you a great story. Long Island Expressway. Let's mm-hmm. go over that.
Yeah.
When that was built in the late 1950s, it was supposed to go all the way out to Riverhead and so forth. But here's something that gets very curious, and I pointed out in our lecture. And we had, by the way, the lecture included all these great slides, which I can't get.
We can maybe if you have access to any of them, maybe we can put them up on our website.
Absolutely. I'd be more than happy to do that.
Thanks.
And I had these great slides to show some things. For example, when the Long Island Expressway was built, you know, he used all his roads, access to bridges and so forth. He used eminent domain, which for his lands confiscated for public use. And if you had a house and you were in the way, you got basically what is called the market price, supposedly, for it. And the courts would decide that. Mm-hmm. Now, if you go on the Long Expressway, and if you ever look out and you're going toward the Midtown Tunnel, mm-hmm. you'll notice that it sort of goes underground a little bit. I mean, it's like you'll see hills on either side. Now, you look to the left and look to the right near where Casino Boulevard is, Queens College is, mm-hmm. you will see houses with their backyards to the service road of the expressway. And people, you know, if you ever notice, why would they want to have their house with the service road back to the service of the expressway? Well, they didn't. What happened was Rob Moses used eminent domain, and he got the land he wanted, but at one point you had to stop.
Yeah.
So those people were out mm-hmm. of luck. So their houses plummeted in value tremendously, because who wants to buy a house with, you know, their backyard and the service road expressway?
Right.
So these are things that happened. Another thing, if you, the example always used, is the Cross Bronx Expressway. It's the biggest parking lot in the world. Not
yep.
the Long Island Expressway.
Yep.
The Cross Bronx Expressway. If you're going across to the Throgs Neck, and then you go right to George Washington Bridge. It was made for access quickly to get to the bridge and then to Jersey. That was his idea. Now, if you really look at that, the engineering technique is incredible. He actually went underground. You see the sides are stone, which is amazing. But, and here's the detriment that's always used against Moses. He ruined neighborhoods with that expressway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that kept on coming up.
And that was, and there's a great example of this. There's a great biography on Ted Williams. We're in the library right now. If you ever get a chance, take a look. This autobiography by Ted Williams. Got the author, but I can get it to you. Wonderful book. And in there, he tells about his own mother. He lived in the Bronx. He grew up in the Bronx. And what happened was when they built that cross, it separated neighborhoods. Where, for example, his mother and other old ladies couldn't go to the supermarket, which is now on the other side of the
right.
expressway. And it just broke up these horrible neighborhoods. I mean, these neighborhoods.
And it happened in a lot of places, too. I think in Brooklyn as well, when the BQE came through, it just literally split neighborhoods in half. And the way the two sides of the divide have since developed was just, it's just, they're totally different.
Exactly. And this has always been held against Moses because of that.
Now, I know that the term for this was often said as, what was it, slum clearance? Was that a term that was used?
Again, if we had my slides, I could show you examples of it.
But that, He came into contention with somebody named Jane Jacobs, I believe, who was very much against what he was doing. And I know this was this, and also I when The Power Broker came out, people's views on him started to skew differently.
Correct. By the way, Carol's book is excellent. It's quite large, by the way.
Yes. It's huge. Yes, it it's huge.
Yes, it one of these books you can lead on the Long Island
You
Railroad.
Can drive. I was going to say you can drive cars over it. It's
Absolutely.
Sturdy.
But yeah, yes, that is true. Now, public housing—that's a whole different area. Now, What he did, he went through areas, particularly the Bronx. Give you one example, and he saw what it was: bombed-out areas. And he said, I want to change this. Now, this was his intent. So I'll give you the intent, and then it goes to reality. And the idea was through public housing. He built these six, seven-story apartment houses using, again, the housing authority, which he'd raised money for, okay, to build them. And he'd rent them out. And the idea was to have the shopping centers in the area and so forth be very nice. Again, what happens here is this. The area around there, and the areas were terrible areas that he wanted to revitalize. He thought that would help. Along with these roads, these parkways and highways, would revitalize the area. But of course, as we know, public housing today is one of the major issues in New York City, is not what it was.
Right.
But you look at things like Stuyvesant Town was his idea and so forth in Manhattan. Some of them have flourished. Others have been disasters.
He didn't have anything to do with Co-op City, did he?
He did.
Oh, okay.
He had something to do with everything.
Because Co-op City was it was an amusement park at one point, something my husband had no idea. We were driving by it. Yeah, and I said, hey, did you know that? I mean, and it didn't last very long and had all sorts of things that happened in its opening that were bad publicity.
Yes, exactly. It was called, I think, Frontierland. Or it was
it? Was it Frontier? Yeah. Was it Freedomland? It was Freedomland.
Freedomland. Right, and no question about it. Now, apparently, I heard that it was built on a toxic dump. That whole area
was it? I just know there were some terrible mishaps with the rides that did not.
Yeah.
It just was really bad for the opening of a. It was almost like to a Disneyland scale,
correct,
from what I understand.
Right. But the Co-op City was built right there.
Yes.
And the idea here was, instead of renting them out, people actually buy shares in the Co-op.
Right.
Which, you know, and that area has somewhat flourished. They built a mall there, very nice. If you go on the Hudson River Parkway, another parkway, you go, it's right there.
Yeah.
You know, so there are some that have, survived and done well. Others have not.
I had a relative who lived in Co-op City, so I would drive by that area when I was much, much younger, when I was 4 or 5 with my father, and he told me all about Freedomland, and that's why every time I drive by there, it's in my mind. I'm like, oh.
Right.
This was a huge amusement park.
And you know about those buildings is incredible. If you have anyone from small town Midwest and you come and you show them that, you say there are more people in one building than around the whole town.
Right.
You know, so again, the whole idea was you'd have shopping, movie theaters, schools, by the way, were built right there as well. The whole thing together. That was his idea.
Hmm.
Other than the various salaries that he was collecting as wearing all these different hats, did Moses profit in any way from where these developments were going to be coming?
You know, if you read, depends on who you read. Some say yes, some say no. I think he was well paid with all the salaries he had, rather than, you know.
So he wasn't doing any land speculating on the side?
Not that I know of.
Okay, just curious.
I mean, that's say there might have been, but exactly. But what makes it interesting is that, you know, if you look at all the things, let me just go with some other things. The United Nations, by the way, was brought to Manhattan because of Moses. He got the land.
Okay. Oh, yes. I was reading about that.
It was supposed to be built in Philadelphia. He stole it right from the city of Philadelphia and built it there. And here's something that's really odd. You know, all the names, you know, we have Robert Moses Park and, you know, out in Long Island and so forth. But you know, in New York City, there's not one park. There is one very, very small park in Manhattan that's named after him. And that's it, of all Manhattan.
Wow.
And where is it in Manhattan?
It's one of the pockets of lower Manhattan, I believe.
Huh.
But it's very, very small. And you think that this man would have, you know, all these things. He lived out in the Islip, West Islip out there, and he loved it out there. Strangely enough, by the way, his personal life, just you sort of alluded to, that he's married twice. His first wife died. He married the second wife. His second wife died the same year, 81. He died. He died of heart attack. He was apparently, from what I read about his housekeeper, was not a nice man. I mean, he was kind of frustrated when his wife died, I guess. But I think the thing is that was kind of sad about this whole thing at his funeral. This is like kind of interesting. He's buried up in Westchester. Mm-hmm. And they had some people, when it came to the actual service, there people there. But actually, at the actual funeral, there's no one there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he died a lonely man. I mean, he was sort of thrust out into the out of the office.
I mean, he certainly, his image was certainly not what it was on the rise, you know, as time went on, you know. And I recall, again, another thing I recall, as Barney mentioned before, and we were talking about with the bridges, I recall hearing about that as a very young child, you know. So these things are in the consciousness of
yes.
people,
yes.
You know, who hear about them as things change.
Correct.
Another thing, interesting thing I read about his personal life, he converted, he was born.
Correct.
Yes.
Yes, he was from a German Jewish family, and he converted to Episcopalian.
Yes.
Correct. Now, people ask why. I believe he felt by being Episcopalian that more doors would open to him. Whether or not it happened or not, who mm-hmm. knows? But that was his idea. Although his parents are very wealthy, as I said, he dealt with very wealthy people. I think that is one of the ideas he switched.
Do you think now? Do you think that contributed to some of the things, you know, that worked out poorly, I guess, for people with less money and who are minorities who maybe couldn't afford cars? Do you think that in his consciousness, he was just so used to the way things were?
Yeah, I think
for him.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement. Correct. Yeah, I think that, you know, he was just concerned about developing New York State. By the way, not just New York City.
Right.
You know, the power authority up in Niagara was his idea. You know, the highways upstate. All this was his, beside the bridges, the 13 bridges he built. So he wanted to make New York State truly the Empire State. What he thought about minorities or not, who knows? You know.
I mean, I grew up in Syosset, and I live in Levittown now. And William Levitt certainly has... Yeah. I guess, you know, a Robert Moses-esque view yes. of him. I mean, mm-hmm. When I was in my undergrad, I took a Film in the 50s class, and my grandparents are original Levitt House owners, or mm-hmm. were. And it's very interesting to kind of see through their rose-colored glasses, oh, no, everything was great. And, you know, I lived in a really diverse neighborhood. And then kind of going back over the history and being like, are you... Really? You did? So, you know, and I love my grandparents to death. I love it. And they call it the best years of their lives. And it's the town that I call home now, mm-hmm. a few blocks away from where they grew up. Mm-hmm. But certainly, you know, you read about William Levitt, and you could say hero or villain about him as well.
Well, the original Levitt contracts all had restrictive covenants in
they
them.
They certainly did.
That's right. That's true.
And that's why when my grandparents, who again, they bought one of the first Levitt houses, they were one of the first people to expand one, which were made to be expanded. Mm-hmm. My grandfather was in construction. And when we asked them about the restricted, no, we had people from, every race. I mean, I don't think so, but if to burst my 93-year-old grandmother's bubble at this point, be like, so I do kind of look, when I think about Robert Moses, I think about Levitt as well, because they were they contemporaries? Did they know each other?
Oh, they knew each other.
Yeah, they must have.
But this, again, Levitt and him both had the same idea, that this was the way of getting people to come out of the islands, the potato fields.
Yeah, well, my ground is rich. I grow lots of plants. I can grow potatoes.
In some way, in Moses' defense, I think I read a quote from him one time. He acknowledged and he recognized that in a lot of ways, some of his projects were damaging to the communities. But he also said something along the lines of, well, if you meet a chef who can make an omelet without breaking any eggs, let me know. And I think
one
that
of my favorite quotes, by the way. Right? Exactly. Right. Exactly. He's going to make enemies, correct. And he knew that. But that was his master plan. You know, urban planning, there was no such thing as urban planning back there. Something about the Great Depression is interesting. There was a tremendous amount of money when Franklin Roosevelt became president available to states and communities. He grabbed it.
Yeah.
And he used it.
Well, he had a vision.
He had a vision. And he used the WPA, and he put, and this is something on his behalf. He put people to work. Construction, roads, you know, economic development in the areas. So give that credit to him as well.
So do you have a side that you fall on, or you do you see him in the gray?
Again, there are plus, always, I guess with everybody, there are pluses and minuses. Mm-hmm. You have to see whether the pluses are better or greater than the minuses and so forth and so on. There were one other example I just want to bring out to you before we get the clue here. He proposed a mid Manhattan Expressway to go across Midtown Manhattan.
I was reading about that. Yeah.
From tunnel to tunnel. And can you imagine that today, being proposed today?
Wow.
You know, just no way that it was going to be built. So, but his idea was his grandiose thing. Get people quickly to an area, you know, develop that area and move on. That was his idea.
There have been times I've been stuck in Midtown, crosstown traffic, and I said, you know what? A six-lane highway here wouldn't be a bad idea.
There's times when there's not Midtown traffic. I don't think that exists.
Exactly. But, you know, it's something you have to look at. But all the things he did, you know, all the bridges, the tunnels, you know, the highways and the parkways, and, of course, the housing, you know, there's so much there. I mean, me and another person who's accomplished that much, you know, it's hard to find.
It's hard to imagine anybody at this point accumulating the kind of power that he had and managing things the way he did, as you're saying.
And he didn't, and as you said, he was never elected to any office.
Exactly. And I think, and this is, you raise a very nice point here about his end of his life, it was the peak of his power, and suddenly he had nothing.
He had really no political base other than
friends, as it seems.
Correct. Early on, Al Smith was his proponent, you know, who was a great, and, but after that, you know, it was over.
Kind of sad.
It was kind of sad. I agree. It's kind of sad.
So, what's down the pipeline for you now?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Great. Well, we have some other lectures coming up here. We have a whole line coming up. We just did one, by the way, on the JFK assassination from the point of view of Clint Hill, the Secret Service agent who was right behind the car and jumped on and pushed Jackie Kennedy back in. I had interviewed him for about an hour.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was put in New York City. He was giving a presentation and so I developed my whole lecture on that and some great slides with that, too. I was able to pull it up. We have been doing, you name it, the topic. We've done it. And we're going to be coming back and see it, I think, for a couple of times.
We look forward
to
talking to
you. By the way, anybody listening, this is a fantastic library.
Thank you. Well, hopefully we'll have you back for another episode, another interview.
I would love to be back here.
Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Thank you. So we are going to close this chapter of
Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.